Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
All right. Now, welcome back. I do not have any more regaining of my throat and my condition, so we will still be kind of talking less passionately and softer. So I apologize. Hopefully you have a volume control on your radio, computer, or however you listen. So if I'm talking too soft, then just turn up the volume a little bit. But maybe that just is intuitive. Anywho, you are listening to the only show that is going into the academic-based evidence of what we have to do. I think that covering all of the aspects of the Constitution is really important. And, oh, by the way, if you go through the Bill of Rights, because there's a lot of people that talk about the due process regarding the impeachment process. Now, if you understand the amendments, when an amendment is making a change to a part of the Constitution, then it so indicates that this amendment changes Section 2, Article 2, Section 1, or Article 5, or what have you. And so, bottom line, if you look, and when we get into it, the due process in, I believe it is the Fourth Amendment and the 14th Amendment talks about due process as well. They don't talk about the impeachment process either of a sitting president or of a politician. What they have done is they kind of gave, you got to understand, the framers weren't stupid, but they did believe in honor and integrity that, you know, was the bedrock of our society and of, you know, people in our society. Therefore, I don't think they fathomed the concept that we would have such corrupt people in public service that they, you know, would utilize the impeachment process as a political tool and not a tool of maintaining integrity of the president or any public office. So bottom line, we now have a situation where people have been so polarized regarding their political affiliation and their ideological affiliation, the Democrats and the communists. And this is why I go through the hard wiring of the progressives. They are so hardwired. It is a scorched earth mentality. They do not tolerate anything that is not within their little bubble. And so when they take control, and the evidence is already there, when they take control of marriage, and you want to come along and you want to oppose their definition, their new definition of marriage, well, may God be with you, because they're going to be coming at you with all guns blazing. It's the same thing regardless of every single aspect of their ideology. They have zero tolerance and they want complete compliance. My friends, we have a contract. Actually, it's a compact, and it's a compact amongst the states. It constrains the federal government into functioning within very specific and defined powers. The Bill of Rights are further constraints, not further privileges, not further access. You know, in other words, just because the First Amendment exists, that doesn't mean they can create laws regarding those aspects in the First Amendment. As I went through this already, as we covered the First Amendment, federal government shall make no law respecting. And that's the same thing with all of these aspects of the Bill of Rights. These are restraints, not a portal for them to make laws regarding these things. This is why the Bill of Rights needs to be repealed. The states need to embed the Bill of Rights into the states. And you, as the citizen of your particular state, needs to start championing this. Because the whole problem, and the framers were very clear on this, when you start listing the nugatories placed on government, then all of a sudden they say, hey, well, you didn't list this. And it loses the context of the fact that we have an enumerated constitution, that they only have these powers. Then they added these nugatory things that they can't do these things, almost insinuating that they have a general constitution. As I went through this in the previous episode, a Bill of Rights is only necessary when you have a general constitution. Had we maintained the paradigm of a delegated and defined constitution, which is what we have, then we would have kept the federal government out of all of these aspects of our life because it's not enumerated. Well, and that's why I say the Bill of Rights creates this paradigm that, oh, well, they must have a general constitution because that's why they've constantly used the Necessary and Proper Clause, the Supremacy Clause, the Commerce Clause, and the General Welfare and Defense Clause as portals to assume new powers, when clearly during the definition process and the terms of the compact process, the ratification debate processes, well, when they went through those things, they clarified that those clauses were not portals to granting the federal government or allowing the federal government to assume any new power. And this is all supported by three presidents that shut down the concept of creating a Department of Transportation without an amendment, because they all three fundamentally said that there is no power within the Constitution for them to do this. If you want to create a Department of Transportation, you must amend the Constitution. And that's why we have a federal government that is so far out. They're so far out of the constraints of the Constitution because they've been bamboozling us and they've been duping everybody. The whole education system has been a facade in helping them aggrandize themselves in every aspect of our life. So we will be getting more into the Bill of Rights. We left off with the militia and the Second Amendment. So we'll try to wrap that up in just a few. But what I also wanted to basically start laying the groundwork, some of the things we're going to be covering coming up, as you know, we've got the New Year's goals, New Year's resolutions, how to set effective goals. And we're also going to be, hopefully, I still have to reach out to Mitchell Nicholas Gerber, and talking about statehood, why we need to use the Constitution to shut down this communist colonialism that is threatening the world. Isn't it interesting that the communists themselves complain about American colonialism, but they're dead silent about communist colonialism? Anyway, because that's exactly what communism has been doing. It has been, you know, the old, and they talked about it in a different aspect in the 50s and the 60s. They talked about it as a domino theory. When one fell, then the next one would fall, and the next one. That was communism, colonialism. Just literally falling and or spreading around the world. And people said, oh, that's a fallacy. No, it's not. It's actually been proven that the domino theory has been in effect and is constantly working. And so, anywho, I also want to plant the seed. I want you to start thinking about Constitution Day. We really need to make a very concerted effort in raising the awareness of the Constitution. This concept that we have a compact that limits this federal government to very specific powers only. It's an enumerated constitution. It is not a general constitution. And so getting people to understand that is, once we get people on board with just that one concept, we're almost halfway there. We're almost halfway there to being able to get people to realize that, hey, well, what do you do when the government is doing stuff that they have no business doing? Well, you audit that contract and you hold them accountable. That's what Republic Review is. It's the auditing process, the holding accountable, and pulling back all the powers that they have assumed back to the states. Dismantling the Leviathan that the communists, you know, I'm just telling you, my friends, you can't tell me that the divine hand of providence didn't understand exactly what we needed in a form of government so that at this point in time, when we're about to lose it all, there's, you know, those of us who love liberty can recognize that this, you know, we actually have the framework that can force them back. And that is called a contract law, holding them to the contract. The government does it all the time. It's about time we do it to the government, don't you think? Anyway, I'm out of time, so we'll talk about our sponsor when we come back. And if you're looking for us to sponsor the show, reach out to us, 425-270-5416. And so with that, we will be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcasts and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with Republic Review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue.
All right, so we have Red State Coffee. And if you have not tried it, well, then you're really missing out because you could really be providing a bag of Red State Coffee to your fellow patriot friends as Christmas gifts. Now, there's still time. I believe if you go online and you order today, you should be able to receive it, you know, well in time to be able to go across the street and hand it to that progressive neighbor of yours and say, hey, you know, I know that we may not see eye to eye politically, but we at least enjoy coffee. So here's a pound of coffee or 12 ounces, whatever it is. Here's a bag of coffee on us. Enjoy. And they'll see that they're drinking Red State coffee. And hopefully they enjoy that. They'll probably take the coffee out of the bag and put it in a different type of container. But you get my point. You get my point. And bottom line is you just sent a message that you're actually contributing or you're supporting by buying that product. You are supporting a movement in restoring our constitutional republic. You're not supporting some, you know, politician, some hack that's going to make these promises and then get up there and make compromises at our expense. That's what every politician does. Even Trump has done that. Politicians do not have the wherewithal to actually fix our problems. Well, at least not an individual, but the politicians at the state level, if you demand that your state legislatures do their job, then we can get this done. And I'm telling you that in these red states, there are many, 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 most of the people in these red, they call them red states because these are very patriotic people, which is one of the things that infuriated me about even having to tolerate the impeachment process is listening to the hypocrisy of the progressives standing up there and calling these communists and socialists who are undermining our Constitution, constitutional patriots. Are you kidding me? It literally made me sick. Anywho, so go to reclaimingtherepublic.org, and right there on the homepage, if you just scroll down a little bit, you will find Red State Coffee. There's a link right there. Click on that, please. And I beg you, give us a call. Let us know, 425-270-5416. Let us know what you think. Let us know if you believe that this is a superior coffee. It may cost a little more, but it is a superior coffee. And hopefully we will find that by your buying this product, the sponsor will actually help us, or we'll get to a point in the proceeds of maybe being able to start covering some more of our costs. But understanding how many people out there love the old coffee bean, you know, that old addiction, there's nothing wrong with, if you're going to maintain an addiction, there's nothing wrong with doing it for a great cause. Anyway, I would much rather you live longer and just live a better, healthy life. But, you know, there's some people that just won't give up their cigarettes. And I'm not going to get a Red State cigarette out there. But anyway, I do know that there's people that just, they got to have their coffee. My friends who work in the medical field, you know, who are nurses and so forth, they're just amazed at how people that are in the hospital, they're drinking coffee 24/7. They have coffee at 2 o'clock in the morning. Really? I mean, it just, you know, the only reason I would ever have, you know, a caffeinated beverage, coffee or something like that in the evening or at any point in time was just to be awake. Anyway, but you'd think that they would want to be sleeping because in the hospital, sleep is your number one friend because that's what helps you heal. With that, we're going to move forward. What we're going to do is we're going to finish off the debates. And then what we're going to do is we're going to dive into some marketing because there's been some stories out there that have been lingering that we want to get into. Then we will get into a little bit later our Christmas message, that Christmas message of how we have Christmas today. And what Christmas, we understand Christmas is, has been this concocted concept of getting people to behave better. And the real thing here, my friends, is the reason why the elite aren't being burned out of their houses anymore in the middle of the winter, and the reason why the elite are enjoying, you know, their life of opulence is because they have concocted and have created this paradigm called Christmas. So you're going to find the information that we're going to cover in this. We're not kicking Santa. What we're doing is we want you to understand the effectiveness of manipulation. But more importantly, you know, the concept of Christmas is not something that we should be preserving for this time of year. There is no such thing as the spirit of the season. That should be the spirit of the day. 365 days of the year. But instead, we just put it aside and we save up and we become generous at Christmas time. No. As a matter of fact, I believe that that's contrary to, you know, the teachings that we're supposed to be compassionate at all times. Anyway, it's not about that at this point in time. So let me dive into the Bill of Rights. And like I said, we left off with the Bill of Rights on the Second Amendment. If you have not read the article on Reclaiming the Republic, the Constitutional Perspective article regarding the militia and a standing army, I will paraphrase the importance of the militia. In Article 1, Section 8, Subsection 15, and I say this all the time, I've been saying this a lot to you, not all the time, but if you read Subsection 15, the 15th bullet in Article or Section 8 of Article 1, you will find that the militia is the only entity that has the constitutional authority to enforce federal law. There has never been an amendment. There has never been an amendment written creating a power to exercise such an example. The 16th Amendment. Well, they passed the 16th Amendment, then they created the IRS. Well, bottom line, who is the federal government supposed to use for collecting taxes? I'm sorry, it's not the IRS. It's the militia. That's who Washington used when they created the excise tax on distilled beverages. When the whiskey rebellions kicked up, Washington grabbed the militia, went up there, and enforced it. And you either pay this or we'll send the militia back up here and kick some butt. It is very clear. The militia is the bedrock of enforcement. Every single federal enforcement agency is a violation of the Constitution, which is why the Second Amendment doesn't just say that the right to bear arms shall not be infringed. It points to the integral part of our security. Because why did the framers do this? Because they talked all the time about the threat of a standing army, that allowing the crown or allowing government to be able to enforce its own laws knew that was the path to despotism and tyranny. So despotic rule is living well here in America. That is why we have so many federal agencies. But it starts off with a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. So that's why they selected that you, your neighbors, your family is supposed to be responsible for the enforcement of the Constitution and constitutional law. No one else. And so this whole concept of a National Guard, there's been no amendment to create a National Guard. There's been nothing that has taken the militia's role and responsibility way out of the Constitution. I've seen plenty of talk about what's going on in Virginia and what's going on in other states about the potential confiscation of weapons. Do you start to get it? Do you start to understand? We've been duped so badly that we do now have a standing army that is threatening our every aspect of our liberty. You know, I've been telling people, I've got friends in the Marine Corps that I've been really stressing the concept of understanding the Constitution. And unfortunately, I guess they've looked at me as the lunatic, well, until lately. And as a matter of fact, a friend of mine who lost his battle, former Marine, retired Marine, who lost his battle to cancer. One of the things he told me in the last year or two of his life, he came back and said, you know, I used to think you were kind of a radical thinking guy. And as I have matured and got informed and started challenging what I have learned and what, you know, what the establishment has said, I have realized that you have been spot on all this time. And he goes, in a way, he basically was apologizing and was basically commending me to please don't give up. Please keep pushing forward, because we need more people like you holding the line. My friends, that can be you. All you have to do is start understanding that everything I am telling you are the academic facts. These are the bedrock of our constitutional republic. You need to start understanding this, and don't take my word for it anymore. We will be right back after these next two promos. Thank you so much.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
If you understand the limitations on an army, because we're going to be diving into the Third Amendment right now, if you understand the limitations in the Constitution regarding the army, they were very cognizant of not allowing a army, a regular army, to be created. As a matter of fact, if you understand the Revolutionary War and how they instituted, the plan of defense in the military, it was made up by the militia. There was really no concept of creating a standing army. And there was no standing army. And if you look historically, that they constantly were to use the militia. That was abandoned because, for the most part, we used the Navy and the Marine Corps as the military service because that was done abroad. We really didn't have a skirmish since the 1812 war. I mean, there was the cavalry in dealing with the Indians or the Native Americans or, you know, the different tribes of North America, whatever. But the cavalry was not a part of the army. Well, it kind of fell under the War Department, though. So they started obscuring the lines. And they started not, you know, upholding the Constitution. My friends, that was the beginning. That was the beginning of how they figured out how to create a standing army without actually creating an army called an army. So what they did was they started creating these different executive departments, because by 1849, so few people understood that they couldn't create a power that they just started doing it with the Department of Interior, the Department of Agriculture, the Department of Justice, the Department of Labor, the Department of Health and Education and Welfare, and so forth and so on. They just started creating these departments like they have the constitutional power to do so, and they don't. I've proven to you that they cannot do it without an amendment. Washington stated that. Madison stated that. Monroe stated that. Every framer stated that, and it was clear within the ratification debates. But they did it anyway, because as people became illiterate regarding our Constitution and became dependent upon these good, noble men who had machinations and nefarious designs in aggrandizing their power, and have gone down in the annals of our history as supposedly heroes because they have expanded their power of government. So bottom line, what I'm here trying to tell you is that if you understand how the federal government is not to have a standing army, then you can understand the Third Amendment, because they knew that there might be a case where we might have domestic domestic war or what have you with possibly a neighbor, Mexico to the south, or because at this point in time, they didn't even know what was going to happen to the western lands. We didn't have all 48 contiguous states. We only had the 13. And so France and Britain were already well entrenched around us in the territories. Spain was to the south of us. We had three hostilities around us. And so the reason they wrote this third amendment in the Bill of Rights was to identify the fact that you cannot be, you're not forced to quarter for a soldier. And I'll explain all of this. You're not to be forced to quarter a soldier unless it has been written by law as necessary for the time frame. Now, you got to remember the Constitution, again, limited the standing army or an army to be in existence for only 2 years, that the budget was to dry up and they were to be shut down. Because they understood the dangers of a standing army. They knew it was one of the most real present threats within government, which is why they depended and created militias. And that's why when they fought the war of 1812, the Revolutionary War and so forth, they really didn't create a standing army. They used the militias. And some states contributed more than others. And so, which was sad for the Revolutionary War, and it frustrated the heck out of George Washington. But anyway, the Third Amendment states, no soldier shall, in time of peace, be quartered in any house without the consent of the owner, nor in time of war, but in a manner to be prescribed by law. In other words, if they're going to declare war and they're going to call up the militia, because what is a soldier? They weren't even saying the army. What is a soldier? A soldier is a person in service, whether that be military or militia. You are still a soldier. As a matter of fact, if you look religiously, somebody that is, you know, whether you're a missionary or whether you're just a way leader in a church, that's a soldier of Zion. Zion, I believe, is a soldier of Israel. Anyway, I may have that completely wrong, but I digress. The whole point is that a soldier does not mean army. It only means that somebody in the service of their country, whether that be militia or what have you. Today, it does mean army. Why? Because Marines are not soldiers. That's an insult. And just like soldiers are not Marines. It's still an insult. And sailors and airmen, we have very distinctive names for the different military standing army services, if you understand what I'm saying. And so because of the nuances and political correctness and so forth, and because, you know, those are fighting words, calling a Marine a soldier, this is why they have completely changed the definition of soldier. But back in those times, a soldier was a person in the service of their country. Now, the fourth article, or the fourth amendment, not article, I'm sorry, the Fourth Amendment is the right of search and seizure as regulated. And so the Fourth Amendment is the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation and particular describing the place to be searched and the person or things to be seized. In other words, they have to be very specific in their search warrant. You have to understand that. They have to be very specific in their search warrant. And the reason why was because the king would just come in and they would just basically look to find, well, hey, you're violating something. You know, this isn't your pen. This is the store's pen. We believe you stole this, and we're going to, and they will try to actually prosecute you for the theft of a pen from your work, from your store, from somewhere down the, and anyway, the whole point of this Fourth Amendment was to keep them from being able to come in and search an unreasonable search to try to find a violation of a crime to basically prosecute you. In other words, they have to have very specific reasons what they're looking for. In other words, they have to have an inkling that you're committing a crime and that what they're looking for has to be linked to that particular crime. The Fifth Amendment of the Bill of Rights Constitution. It is a Fifth Amendment to the Constitution, but actually this was the seventh out of the Bill of Rights because they submitted 12 and only 10 were actually adopted. Now, I believe the second was actually adopted and it became the 27th? Anyway, if I memorized all of these things, I could just spout them off. But it was the it was the Hillary Amendment regarding a senator's pay and so forth. Anyway, the Fifth Amendment is no person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on a presentment of indictment of a grand jury, except in cases arising in the land of naval forces or in the militia, not the army, when in actual service in time of war or public danger. Nor shall any person be subject for the same offense to be twice put in jeopardy of life or limb. In other words, you can't be tried twice for the same crime. That's double jeopardy. That's where that clause comes from. Nor shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself. In other words, I have a right to, you know, not have to incriminate myself, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. And so people are saying, oh, you know, this is a violation of the due process clause. I'm here to tell you, my friends, that what the House is doing with impeachment is not a due process. They're not convicting, they're not trying Trump. Trump is going to be tried in the Senate. They can trump up all the charges they want. They don't even have to call any witnesses. They can make this the biggest kangaroo court in the world, and they will be known as the kangaroo court session. And as a matter of fact, that's what you need to start calling Congress, as the kangaroo court. Or I should say the House of Representatives of Congress is the kangaroo court session. In the history of American history, it is the kangaroo court session. Anywho, because they're making it up as they go along and they're just doing anything and everything they can to get the outcome that they are seeking. Anyway, and this is what the whole Constitution and principles, you know, were to protect us from. Anyway, we'll be right back after these next two promos. Thank you so much.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Okay, and as you can tell, my voice is getting strained. So with this last segment, we will try to close out these last five amendments. Now, the sixth amendment is the right to speedy trial. Now, when all these people are clamoring about the due process of law, this is only when you're under trial. When there is a grand jury investigation, you really don't have the right to counter-question any of the witnesses or anything like that. And if you understand the process of... So anybody that's out there telling you that Trump has the right of due process in the House of Representatives impeachment process, ask them, where is that? The fact of the matter is the House has the latitude of becoming a politically polarized unit or entity, and the fact is that that's exactly what they've become, and they've decided to become a kangaroo court. That's why we need to just basically call it for what it is. This particular numbered session of Congress should go in the annals of history as the kangaroo court session of the House of Representatives. And as a matter of fact, if I was the Senate, I would make that a law, and or if we get the House and Congress back, I would make that a law that in the annals of history, that particular session of the House of Representatives will be now known for the rest of time as, and this is non-amendable or what have you, as the kangaroo court of the House of Representatives. And let the people, and actually list the names of all of those participants in that session that chose to, exercise a kangaroo court. Make these people own this. Make these people wear this. But the fact is, we don't hold anybody accountable. And they try to make it up as they go along. I'm stressing. And I this is a very passionate job. If you're really passionate about this, obviously, that's one thing that really helps in doing this. But anyway, let me get on. The right to a speedy trial and witnesses and et cetera. In a criminal prosecution, you got to understand, here it is right there. In a criminal prosecution, Trump's not being prosecuted. He's only being determined whether they're going to indict him and have the Senate try him. The accused shall enjoy the right of a speedy trial and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed, which district shall have been previously ascertained by law, and to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusation, to be confronted with the witness against him, to have compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in his favor, and to have the assistance of counsel for his defense. I can't emphasize enough. This is during the criminal process of the trial or the trial process. An impeachment is not a trial of crime. In other words, the only punishment that comes from impeachment is you're kicked out of office. It's really not a criminal trial, but it is a trial nonetheless, and you do have the right to challenge witnesses and so forth and so on. That, and in the Senate, that is where it's done. But the big thing I really want to point out regarding the Sixth Amendment here is that if you understand the fact that you're in a trial process, right? And it says right here that you have a right to a speedy and public trial. Do you see any clause? I ask you to go read the Sixth Amendment. Do you see any clause within this amendment that says that, you know, certain information has to be safeguarded and cannot become public information for national security purposes? And as a matter of fact, do you see anywhere in the Constitution where they actually have granted the federal government or any of the governments the ability to withhold information from the public because of national security? No. No, because they have deemed that what they should have done, because in a trial process, whether it be a spy or what have you, and as a matter of fact, they do this all the time to protect themselves, and so that we can't get, you know, the real ire of the public can't come up because, oh, well, it was classified. There is no protection. There is zero protections within the Constitution over classified information. We had the need for national security. As a matter of fact, we even had a spy agency. George Washington founded our first spy agency here in the independent states during the Revolutionary War. So there is a need for spying. There is a need for classified material and classified protection. But the Constitution does not protect it in the case of a trial. And bottom line is, I believe that there should be protection for classified, for real national security, but that has to be proven. And that, you know, for necessity of counsel, the counsels should be, because like there's many a times where you may have a lawyer, but because they're not cleared, they don't get access to that, so they can't come in and do that or have access to some of the information. That has to be changed. We need to actually look at that because our world is bogged down way too much. And if you notice, and I already complained about this before, how the Democrats are going into SCIFs, having these closed door meetings, and they're using a SCIF outside the intended purpose of a SCIF. They're not really talking about classified. What they're doing is they're trying to hide information from the public. And there's nowhere. As a matter of fact, it's very clear here that the accused shall have the right and enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial, period. Show me in the Constitution where they have the ability to be able to pull the wool over our eyes because they say it's classified. It's not there. Anyway, right to trial by jury is the Seventh Amendment. In suits at common law, where the value in controversy shall exceed $20, the right of trial by jury shall be preserved, and no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise re-examined in any court of the United States than according to the rules of the common law. And so This is where they point to the rules of common law in any court of the United States. That's it. But people get really frustrated with the fact that they think the common law is the law of the United States, and it is not. There's nowhere in the Constitution where common law has been declared as the law of the Union or the law of this republic, which is why Louisiana has civil law, not common law. And as a matter of fact, I've proven this to you in the ratification debates because they wanted to know, they challenged this concept that, hey, the common law is not the law of the land. Anyway, excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishments inflicted. Now, I'm here to tell you, if you look at our criminal system, and there are people of affluence where excessive bail, you know, if you're a Hollywood movie star or you're just a billionaire, then there's no such thing as excessive bail. And what they should be doing is they should be setting bail on the value and or the worth of the individual. If you're poor, I mean, just putting $100,000 on, you know, a bail on somebody, or $1 million, so they have to put one-tenth, which is $100,000 up, that would be excessive bail. And I understand the crimes, you know, maybe you want to have those types of bails, but it's not equal. We need to revamp the bail system and the fines and the penalties to be appropriate to the affluence of the criminal or the accused, I should say. So if you're a baseball star, football star, or you're a well-paid athlete and you get a drunk driving ticket, well, your bail should be set based on the same as the – and if the average person makes a certain amount of money and the bail is $50,000 – because the average person in America, I don't know, it may make $50,000, but there's way too many people that don't. And it becomes excessive to those people who don't. You know, like a 19-year-old that is trying, you know, just got married, is trying to make a life of him, and he makes a mistake. Believe it or not, he's immature. I get it. And is that fair for that person? We should have a fair and equitable system that allows these circumstances to be considered as how we assign bail. And I believe that is the spirit and the intent of the Eighth Amendment, so that we do not have excessive or cruel punishment. The Ninth Amendment, the rule of construction of the Constitution. The enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. And the most important, this Ninth and Tenth Amendment are the most important. The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. Now tomorrow, because I'm out of time, we will dive into why these two amendments are the most important and why they need to stay, not as a part of the Bill of Rights, but as a part of the Constitution, because they were part of the Articles of Confederation as well. Before I lose my voice, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic and we need your help. God bless.
The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our Constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contribution page, and you can become a listed supporter of Liberty.